Hey everyone, welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report, kicking off today with a new guest to the show. Now, his name has been mentioned a couple times by some other company management team members and also by a couple of the analysts and newsletter writers that I have chatted with over this last year. I'm chatting with Charles Funk. He is a geologist, also the CEO of Heliostar. That's a company that I will be introducing to everybody in the coming weeks, and VP Exploration at Vizsla Resources, which I know a lot of our listeners are up to date on the Vizsla story. Now, Charles, since it's your first time on the show, I wanted to talk big picture, precious metals, especially markets, with you. Let's look at, let's say, something like the gold price, because gold, it started off this year at around $1,500. Back at the start of 2019, it was about $1,300. Gold has done very well in the last couple of years. I think in a bull market, we can confidently make that argument that gold is in a bull market. But as a geologist and as a management team member of a couple companies that are out there making some discoveries, how do you view this rise in precious metals prices with how you run and manage a company?
Thank you for having me, Corey. It's quite a big question. I think it changes everything and it changes nothing, if that makes sense. You know, first of all, it provides a lot of capital and provides a lot of impetus for people to go out and find new projects or turn on mines for profitable production. But we all know that once the price moves up, the cost of production fairly quickly trails up behind it. So you have to look for projects where you know you can maintain a good margin.
So what does that mean when you're either analyzing companies or even when you're eventually going to plan on putting out some sort of a economic study? What price levels do you like to look at here for assets to value them, understanding that, hey, gold, silver, everything is volatile and you can't just take the best case scenario?
Exactly. You know, my background was with mid-tier and major companies, and you can do it as simply as take 5 or 10 year average prices and project them into the future. You can take consensus bank estimates, which will take us back to $1,500 gold going forward. The simplest way from an investor is look for grade, because higher grade projects have a much higher potential of being significant margin producers.
Now, how do you view the difference between well-known projects or recycled projects, I guess we could say, that say they were either a mine in the last decade or two, or even last century? Some of these people that are kind of rehashing these old mines, they are old mines. So how do you balance out a relook at an old project that might have been in production versus new projects, projects that are relatively underexplored but seem to be getting a sniff of some higher grade or some interesting drill results?
Yeah, as a geo and possibly also talking my own book, you know, always I think you've got to be aware of those old projects. And I think there's two classes that you might like to think of older projects, or projects that have been around for a long time, even if they're just deposits. And, you know, we've all known, and everyone's got a favorite sort of project that they use that we classically call a dog, a project that will never make money. And I kind of break them into two classes. You know, the first is the margin dog, that no matter what, you say it's a gold project, no matter what the gold price is, the cost to pull that out of the ground and economically produce it will always be higher than the cost of the gold price. And so that's a margin dog, and that'll never make money forever. And they get dusted off in every cycle. I think maybe the more interesting one is a class that I'd call a CapEx dog, where the project itself actually does have good grades and can generate good margin, but it's super expensive to build. You know, current day analogs for that would include, you know, Galore Creek, that's going to take significant infrastructure, maybe KSM as well in the Golden Triangle, or up in Alaska. Donlin Gold's probably a good example. So, you know, huge builds. I think Teck would have a good example with Red Dog, where Red Dog, I think, took between 20 and 30 years to pay back and then became very profitable. So that's a more interesting angle to think about, instead of just simply saying these projects are hard work.
So what do you think can work then in terms of investments and in terms of actually building an asset? Is it the CapEx dogs, which just take a lot of upfront capital? Or is it these marginal dogs where finally the metals price, the underlying metals price, can get to a level where maybe it makes it profitable?
Yeah, I think depending on who you are, if you're a junior explorer, you can't play in. So first of all, I don't think anyone should go after a margin dog. I don't think that ever makes money. It might make money at the expense of investors, which is the last thing we want. So if you're a junior, you've got to find high margin projects, you know, with smaller capexes to build that have good margin and create good cash flow. I think if you're the majors, you start looking at JVs and partnerships to tackle these bigger projects because they're the tier one deposits that are waiting to be unlocked.
What do you think about the majors' role in the sector right now? Because the majors, they've been building up some nice gas positions. They have been profitable as the metals prices have run higher, but they've been quite slow on any M&A transactions. How does that play into the market as we move into next year?
I have a tongue-in-cheek view that majors make great decisions and terrible decisions and nothing in between. It's not quite as simple as that, but the logic is, when the market's at the bottom of the cycle, they are the ones with the cash flow. They are the ones who are able to successfully allocate that capital into new projects. And so they do, you know, cheap deals on good projects. And then what happens is the market starts to move, or at least my view is, the market starts to pick up and they stick to their metrics. And I've been in some of these meetings, so some of this is firsthand knowledge, where they say, we're not, you know, we've done deals with this price, you know, we're going to do this kind of JV or pay this amount of dollars per ounce in the ground for the stage of project. And all of a sudden, there's a lot more competition and they get comprehensively outbid for those projects. And we're probably coming into that part of the cycle. And then at the very top of the cycle, they finally move. And then they start doing all the stupid deals where they pay ridiculous premiums. They move away from those long-term price averages and pay way too much. And that's almost the bell ringing for the top of the cycle.
It's so crazy to think about that, too, because it is the majors driving these valuations, right? They're the ones paying the money for this, and then they let it get out of hand on the upside. Do you use any of these type of valuations when companies or analysts say, well, this company is getting valued for this much per ounce of in the ground, or this takeout happened at this much per ounce in the ground. I know a lot of people refer to these numbers, but personally, I find it hard to come up with a consensus because every project is so different and they're all in different areas that to me, it's almost too broad of a comment to make. But what do you think about when people try to value projects based on ounces in the ground?
It's the art of the deal, isn't it? We've sort of touched on margin dogs, which it doesn't matter how much gold. You could have 50 million ounces to use gold as the analog, and it doesn't matter. It's not profitable. So I think, you know, if you're selling, you point to the stronger ones and the reason why you should be paid at the premium. And if you're buying, you point to the other. So they're definitely a guide. But, you know, the deals that get done that I see, particularly the good deals, the win-win deals, which we should be targeting as an industry, you know, there's a good reason for the seller and the buyer to get together, either in the merger or an asset sale. And so there has to be some kind of synergies or some kind of need on both parties for a successful deal to occur.
Yeah, there is. But who knows? We have started to see some M&A start to pick up. And when it does start to pick up, that's when you start getting some of these bidding wars underway. Charles, what about your strategy when it comes to exploring projects? Everyone has their own kind of unique way of viewing projects and going after discoveries, even delineating discoveries. What's your kind of broad strategy? Do you have something that you can sum up for us?
Yeah, I think, you know, it does vary a lot, but I think a good rule of thumb that I was taught early when I worked with Newcrest was, you know, back to the theme of the talk is when you pay for ounces, that's coming directly off your margin. So if a deposit has a $200, $300 gold margin and you pay $50 or $100, you've got to think that's not coming off the price of the gold. You know, that's not 5% of $2,000. That actually is, you know, 20, 30% of the margin that you'd make. So the ounces that you pay for, you're taking that off your margin. You'll never recover that. So always look for exploration upside because it's the ounces that you don't pay for that can really move the needle in the value of a project. So I've always gone and looked for projects where you can see that there's clear potential And then you hopefully use your team's technical expertise to unlock that potential and create value that way.
Yeah, it's just a process, right? You work through it and you work through it in a logical manner while always keeping kind of that blue sky on the table, because that is, in all fairness, what the majors or what M&A transactions are based off of. They value what you have in the ground, but they also look at the blue sky. So give us a balance there.
Absolutely. Like, everyone's looking for those asymmetric deals where you're protected for the downside. So if it's exploration, you're not paying a lot, but you get all the upside. If it's M&A, your base case, you're paying for the base case that's there. And you have, I think the groups that do it best are the royalty and streaming companies, because they pay full value for the dollars that are in the ground. But we all know that these mine lives extend for years and decades in a number of cases beyond what was originally seen. So they have one of the most asymmetric business models that exist.
All right, Charles, wrap us up with just a quick little overview on the company that you're running, Heliostar. As I mentioned, I will be bringing you on, but is there a quick little update that you can provide for everybody who hasn't heard of the story that could give them at least a little impetus to look at the company's presentation?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're a new company that's got a new management team, a new board. I think the highlight is our Unga project in the Aleutian Islands in Alaska. Has 384,000 ounces at 13.8 grams per ton gold. And we think we can demonstrate a pretty clear pathway to 1 to 2 million ounces. So that's our target. So pretty attractive high-grade gold in the United States is an appetizer for people to come and have a look closer.
All right, perfect. I'll post a link to the Heliostar website and the presentation so everyone can maybe learn a little bit more. As I mentioned, I will be having Charles on at the beginning of next year to give a bit more of a detailed overview of the project and some of the work that is on tap for this year. Charles, thank you very much for taking some time today. I hope you have a very Merry Christmas, very Happy New Year, a general happy holiday season to you. It's a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you, Corey, to you and to the listeners. Merry Christmas to everyone.